Hello, stellar listeners, and welcome to the Atypical Behavior Analyst, your place and space to hear conversational information about the science of behavior analysis. I am your host, Kelly, and welcome to episode 51. But before we jump into today's discussion, let's go over some quick housekeeping. First off, we're ACE approved. So if you're listening for continuing education units, jot down the two keywords interspersed during the talk, and then take those over to our website, atypicalba.com, where you can purchase CEUs. And take a little bit of time to cruise around the site to find additional resources for each episode and more information about our phenomenal guests. Next, if you'd like to stay up to date with upcoming talks and live events, you can follow us on Instagram, Facebook, and LinkedIn. Our lives are a fantastic time to hang out, learn, and interact with our guests, and our social media is a great way to get to know the podcast, so reach out and say hello. You can also rate and provide feedback on your favorite listening platforms to help further our dissemination mission. And lastly, stick around after the talk to hear a preview clip from episode 52. Okay, today's discussion. Home dynamics are different than any other environment a person contacts. There are multiple competing contingencies, constantly fluctuating variables, laundry, meals, cleanup, practice, therapy, appointments, medical issues, work, bills, the list goes on. And yet, professionals often require parents to have the highest amount of fidelity regarding program implementation. And this is the point where scientific and ever-growing, ever-expanding technological worlds collide and produce something that can support the needs of caregivers and clients while still building skills, maintaining rapport, and continuing collaboration. In this live chat, we meet with Alan and Stuart of Attend Behavior to talk about meeting families where they're at, building programs and data collection that are accessible and usable, and improving the overall family dynamics. So without further ado, buckle in and enjoy episode 51, Expanding the Behavioral and Technological Galaxy with Alan and Stuart of Attend Behavior. Anyways, yeah, welcome. It is, again, Wednesday. I have to keep thinking about this. It is Wednesday. It's Atypical Live. We are shifting gears, kind of sort of, from our last few lives, which makes me really excited because we've had a bunch of animal discussions lately. And then we went down a medical path with Brennan and we discussed knee rehabilitation. So that was super rad. And then we talked with Sue Gabriel recently, and she's a psychiatric nurse. And so now we're going to go in again, just a slight shift in a different direction, and we're going to look at behavior technology. So not the same as hooking up an electromyograph thing that I will, an EMG, as Brennan told me, up to your leg, but this time we're actually looking at things that are a little bit more accessible. So Brennan talked about using this app with his device and everything, and the applications of it are really cool. People were very responsive to it. And so I'm really excited to get into this because if there's one thing that I think a lot of us feel frustrated with, it is the fidelity of programming and follow through with recommendations and trying to set up the environment so that not just the child is successful, but also their whole family in general. Because if the family unit isn't healthy, then, you know, we're not going to be able to make progress overall. So with all of my rambling done, again, welcome. Thank you guys so much. Alan and Stuart are here, and we're going to talk super nerdy about behavior and technology. But before we get into that, my favorite thing to do is to have you guys just kind of give your story. How did you get into the field? Because Stuart, you are not a behavior analyst. And so I love when we get this collaboration. It's super rad. So if you guys want to tell you a little bit of your story, and then we will dive into the good stuff.
Sure. Well, Alan, you want me to start?
Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, so yeah, I'm not a behavior analyst. I'm a child psychologist. My area is behavior. I joke with Alan that I go to a different church, but sing from the same hymn book. So, you know, I've been studying behavior. I started my career at the University of Houston. So I was a faculty member there for about 12 years or so. And my research area was kids with behavioral issues. I did a little bit of research around reading disabilities, things like that. I was really kind of specifically interested in issues related to treatment fidelity. You know, one of the things that I'll say a lot is the research is pretty clear about what works. The challenge is how do we get what works implemented? Because as you were saying, Kelly, that's kind of where the rubber hits the road. You know, probably most of us on the call, if we were presented with a case, we'd approach it the same way. We'd probably have a few of the similar hypotheses, but we'd know if we were going to produce the outcomes we need help from everyone, whether that's not just the child, the parents, caregivers, teachers, whoever it might be. So at the time when I was at the university, I was in a college of education. So I really kind of took a look at this lens of treatment fidelity from the school's perspective, collected a lot of data from teachers, you know, around their beliefs about behavior, what works, what doesn't work for them. And it became, you know, pretty clear that around the country, only about 15% of the college education provide any sort of training and classroom management. So for most teachers, it's kind of on the job training when it comes to behavior. And so I had the idea back then, and I'm old, so this is a while ago. So this was like in the early 2000s. How about if we created a software program, kind of like TurboTax, but for teachers, to help them identify different types of issues that are going on, come up with some hypotheses around strategies they could try, but more importantly, support them in the implementation of those practices. So, you know, this was quite a while ago, but had this idea, built a technology program around it, worked with some school districts around the country. Houston ISD was our first district that we worked with. Actually, Keller ISD was one of the earliest customers for us. So someone in your backyard, and Dallas. And we worked with several large districts in Texas and got really good results. Really what we were trying to do was improve the fidelity of the implementation of the behavioral programs that were being implemented with students with emotional behavioral disabilities. We were real excited about the results we got. We showed a 40% drop in out-of-school suspensions. We saw a closing of the achievement gap for kids with severe emotional behavioral disabilities. And really kind of fundamentally what drove that was if you could produce better behavioral outcomes, you know, kids will be able to benefit more from instruction, right? So they're not out of class, things like that. So I ended up leaving the university to run that startup. And it was a great experience. We had a great outcome, worked with school districts all over the country. That company ended up becoming part of Pearson's clinical assessment division. So, you know, clinical assessment is the group that's responsible for publishing the Vineland, for example, the Basque, things like that. So, and I stayed at Pearson for probably, I want to say it was 6 years or so. I ran their innovation programs and was responsible for a global portfolio of products that were used for special ed eligibility and in behavioral health as well. You know, it was a great opportunity to meet a lot of really neat people, really smart people. But I always wanted to get back into the startup world and in particular, try to look at how we could do what we did in the schools, but for parents and within the healthcare system. So that's really, you know, kind of to some degree how we ended up here today. You know, we launched Attend Behavior, which is we're focused on improving family engagement, caregiver guidance. We ended up, and I kind of started that in a similar way, collected data from about 1,000 parents around what works for them, what doesn't work for them, what are the challenges that they have. And one of the questions that I asked them was, If you had a parent who had a child like yours and they came to you and they said, what's the one thing that we should do that's worked for you? What would it be? Because really, you know, one of the things that we saw in the data is that when I asked them what types of strategies, techniques, intervention approaches do parents use, they try a lot of things. Right? So they do a lot of different things. The one thing that kept popping up over and over again was of all the things they would recommend to another parent, it was behaviorally based parent training. So behaviorally based parent training that taught them the principles of behavior really helped them understand what the key techniques were that produced better outcomes. That was one of the most highly rated approaches that one parent would tell another parent they had to do. Problem was of the 1,000 or so, you know, parents that we collected data from, only 25% had access to that. So, you know, that really kind of got me thinking, how could we come up with a good technology solution to not just, you know, broaden the reach of what we know works, but support parents in the moment when they're trying to use the techniques that we teach them? Because really, again, getting back to the implementation process, it's one thing to talk about reinforcement. It's another to be able to use reinforcement with some fluency, right, and understand it. And that's where technology can help support that process, obviously collect data, things like that. So that was the idea. And as I started thinking about this, one of the things that we wanted to do is make sure that the learning content in Attend had a strong evidence basis for that. So we ended up partnering with Oxford University Press. They're the publishers of the Ruby Parent Training Program for Disruptive Behavior. And some of you guys may know Ruby is an evidence-based program. The lead author is Dr. Karen Bears at Seattle Children's Hospital. Her and her colleagues, several of whom are very accomplished researchers in the autism world, developed the Ruby program in collaboration with parents to really understand how to take some of those practices that we know work, but customize them, individualize them for families who have children on the spectrum. And then they spent probably a few years researching it. They conducted 3 randomized clinical trials. They're shown to be very effective. It's designated a program that works. So we were fortunate to license that content and then work with Dr. Bears and several of our colleagues on transforming what you would normally do in a family guidance or parent training session into a technology solution. Now, I started all this during a pandemic, which I would not advise doing a pandemic startup during a pandemic. But one of the benefits of that was some of the people that we met during that time who were really kind of interested in what we were doing. So we were able to get some early adopters, early folks, and so that we could beta test this and get feedback from them. And one of those was Alan Fulbright. And so I'm going to pause here and let Alan introduce himself and tell the audience a little bit about how he got involved in the story.
Oh, where to begin? So I'm a board certified behavior analyst. I think we mentioned earlier, I've been practicing since 2011. Started as a tech working with kids back before we were RBTs. Way back in the day, and not quite as old as Dr. Pasecco, but I'm getting there. One of the first things that happened, there were very few of us back then. And so you would end up in pretty wild positions straight out of the box. Like, here's you a clinic. Best of luck with that. Because the funding sources weren't quite as strong, you fit in where you could. So I ended up seeing a lot of adult people who had HCS Medicaid waiver stuff. So in Texas, that's there's a lot of those guys and a lot of need. So what ends up happening just because of just the way that all that funding works and everything, and Kelly, you certainly know how this all goes down, but you end up in a very much a consulting role working with parents, caregivers, whether it be staff or foster care providers and stuff like that. So I've spent the majority of my career consulting with caregivers and trying to provide them a framework and some training so they can kind of get a feel for, do this when this happens, right? And writing those behavior plans just to maybe prevent as much hospitalization or having to, call police and all that stuff like that. Like, a lot of the time you're just trying to patch it together, right? Working with in those situations. And then coming back into the world of clinic ABA, the working with kids with autism, and you start to see that it's such a night and day kind of world where it's so child focused. And coming into that world, I quickly realized that there's not enough focus on the parent caregiver as part of the family unit being that client. And it's quite often left out, or it becomes like a side thought. Oh, we're supposed to do parent training, but what that becomes is a 15-minute kind of meeting in the lobby where we tell you how your kid's doing, but they really don't know what that means or how it transfers to home. And there's no way for them to problem solve that next behavior that pops out of nowhere. So I was working for a larger ABA company, and I think that they kind of realized that that's where my niche was. That's where I fit in, is working with the parents and caregivers, and realized that that is really, like, the leadership there saw some value in putting, somebody in that role. So I started looking for something that could help the clinicians engage parents, because, and Stuart will talk more about this, I'm sure, but we've seen a lot where BCBAs are getting very little training, if any, in doing any kind of connection with parents at all, or really any other highly vocal verbal person. It's, how do we collect data on our kid and make really great graphs of what we're doing within the clinic? But once we look at those, we're not really that worried about it, right? It may generalize down to the classroom down the hall. And that's the way our mastery and generalization criteria work. And that's great. Look at our graph. But at the end of the day, it never leaves the clinic. So, you know, we got some automatically maintained behavior with our graphs, right? So let me show myself how cool I am. But that doesn't go anywhere else, right? Like that doesn't keep that kid from becoming more aggressive when they can't live with mom anymore and they're 18 and they're, or even as young as 12 or 13 and starting to go through puberty and all this stuff. And we're not seeing them in an ABA clinic anymore because that's not super profitable. So the parents left to try to figure it out, right? Like, what do we do then? They're just kind of left to the wind with no focus or a parent that's got the ability to problem solve. So coming back to where I was as the director of family engagement is trying to find something that helps all these BCBAs be able to get that child to that next level safely and in a way that they're able to grow with these skills rather than just be kind of turned loose to figure it out when the next phase of life happens, right? Like that autism doesn't go away because they're not getting clinic services and they've, you know, and in big quote marks, they've graduated the program, right? Like, what does that mean? And what's the parent supposed to do now or the public school supposed to do? And let's make sure we provide a framework to problem solve that. And so I was looking for a way to systemize that. And I was very familiar with the Ruby Parent Training Program because I've used it really working outside of what it was intended for. We're training adult parents because that's not really where that age range is supposed to be. But Ruby just provides a really great framework, right? That takes you in really good order and provides it in a way that parents can understand. And that a clinician, honestly, it's not as hard when you've got something structured to deliver. We all love it when some response effort goes away, right? Like who doesn't want to find an easy way to do the hard thing, right? So I was looking at that and got introduced to Stuart and he gave me a quick demo. I was like, oh, we're using this, you know? And then like Stuart said, the pandemic happened and it made it really hard to be able to do anything outside of the norm or what was seen as being the most profitable, right? So all that happening, I was let go from that company on that kind of framework and was like, hey, Stuart, that was really cool what you're doing. Maybe you need somebody to come and get involved and working on that. So that's how I ended up working with Attend Behavior and just have been more and more impressed with the direction we're going and the things that we're able to do to provide that framework and routines and ability to learn for parents, but also providing that kind of framework for clinicians to be able to step into a world where they're both able to provide quality family guidance with that framework from the technology, but also learn how to do it more effectively at the same time from the same tool. So I really feel like technology's able to, in this case with Attend Behavior, solve those two birds with one stone, I guess.
Oh, yeah. And what I think is funny is, you know, we forget to kind of behavior analyze our behavior analysis selves and our programming and everything. And as you're talking, I'm going, you know, what are some of our core principles when it comes to reinforcement? Like immediacy is one of those things. What do we talk when, and prompting? Again, we have to look at like timings of things. And when we put in recommendations and programming for home, we are just blatantly forget, not I would say blatantly, but we are forgetting those things because I'm like, here, I'm going to write this down for you. I'm going to model it a couple of times. There's your prompt. 6 hours later, you may actually have to engage in that behavior. And then that reinforcer is so delayed too, because if the child's not, you know, if they're still struggling or they're still escalating, it takes longer to get it under control. That's not reinforcing. And for me to come a week later and go, good job. I'm so glad that you followed the program. Bloody hex, dude. Like, what are we doing to ourselves? Like, no wonder. So I love the fact that I've gotten a little teaser on this. And if you've checked out the website or anything, there's a link to the YouTube videos and to Attend Behavior's LinkedIn as well. So please check those out. But it's a really cool thing because it does, it gets rid of those barriers in such a way that also keeps a boundary, which we can come to at a later point when we get to like pros and cons of technology. So with kind of that, would you guys give just a brief rundown of what the program looks like, how you guys use it, and then we'll delve more into details.
Sure, Kai. Yeah, and I appreciate that. You know, the program, just to kind of back up a minute, there's two sides of it. One is a mobile application, which is for parents. So if someone went to the App Store or the Play Store, they could download Attend right now. But that is for the parents, not necessarily the clinicians. The clinicians, if you're a clinician, you can go to the website, watch a little video about it, learn about it. There's a clinician portal for them. For the parents, the app is available both on Android and Apple devices. If they don't have a device, they can always log in the internet. It's also fully available in Spanish, right? So we wanted to be able to make sure that we provide, good resources for a lot of different people as we can. And being in Texas, right, there's not always great resources for folks that are non-English speakers. So we're excited to be able to offer that as well. Now, with Attend itself, if I dive into the app, there's three parts of it. There's the learning content, right? And the learning content, as I mentioned a minute ago, is based on the Ruby Parent Training Program. And I would say, one of the things that we're a little different from some of the other parent training family guidance approaches is, a lot of times what some technology programs will do or approaches is we take the treatment plan that we're working with on the child, and we kind of train the parent how to implement that a lot of times. And in some ways, we want the parent to take on some of the role of the RBT, right? If that makes sense to you guys. So, and that makes a lot of sense, especially when we're trying to do skill development. We're trying to get the parents to really be able to teach each of the steps around the task analysis, collect some data, see how that's going. But with Ruby, one of the things we do is we step back, right? And say, before we dive into that, let's make sure that parents understand some of the core concepts around this. So the first course that they complete is the ABCs of behavior. And that's kind of introducing the idea, the ABC model of behavior, the concept of an antecedent, the consequence. Then we shift gears a little bit, talk about, now that you understand kind of how behaviors are learned and how there's triggers that trigger behaviors, things like that. First thing we do is we try to help parents understand that if we can control some of the antecedents, that's one way for how us to be able to manage behavior a little more effectively. So there's a section that talks about prevention strategies. And then we talk a little bit about creating routines and schedules and things like that. Then we dive into reinforcement. And, I'm going to kind of pause here for a couple of things to echo what you just said. Part of the reason I think when we're in the clinic and we explain these sorts of things to parents, that we explain and we move on so quickly is because on the surface, these concepts sound pretty straightforward, right? So if you're a parent or someone, right, and I introduce the idea of reinforcement. So we're going to have a behavior that we're going to promote. We come up with a reinforcer to incentivize the child, all that sort of thing. We have some sort of schedule that the child can earn the reinforcement, all that sort of stuff. On the surface, that makes sense. But when we kind of dive into using that technique, that's when we discover the part under the water, right? All the complexity. And that's where people stumble. And as Alan was saying, when we stumble, when we have problems, challenges, that's when we kind of back off or maybe give up. And I will tell you, backing up from, developing technology solutions that are behaviorally based for the last 20 years or so, that's the number one challenge I had when working with programmers, right? The software engineers go, oh, this makes sense, right? We're going to track this. We're going to track that. We're going to do this. And then when they dove into it, that's when they understood all the complexity around it. And the same is true for everyone. So being sure that there's a strong foundation in that content is really the learning part of Attend. And now it's one thing to talk about antecedent management strategies or to talk about ABC model behavior or talk about reinforcers. The next is, how do you personalize that to match what's going on at home, right? So how do you basically come up with a plan that's relevant for the parents? And that's something that, Dr. Bears emphasizes a whole lot, is one way that we keep parents engaged, which is a notorious challenge, sometimes is clinicians will say, parents don't seem like they're really interested in this stuff, right? Is what we want to do is we ask the parent, what problems can we help solve for you, right? What are the behaviors that if we could get under control would make your life easier? What skills can we help promote for your child that would give you a little bit of freedom from your child? So if we're solving, you know, their problems, as opposed to just strictly focusing on, you know, what the results of an assessment tell us, what we should do, it's really that together is where we get better results. So as a parent completes the courses, there's little questions that pop up. And the whole point of those questions is to basically contextualize how we're going to implement those strategies at home to solve problems that are real world, you know, pressers for the parents. And then kind of once we do that, there's a suite of other tools in there that are designed to help build fluency for parents. And that's where, like, for example, if we teaching the concept of social reinforcement and we talk to parents about catch them doing good. After we do this, we'll ask them, hey, when would be a good time to practice catch them doing good? What behavior would you want to focus on? So they tell us all this, and then we push out coaching tips for them around that time. And it'll say something, I'll pop up on the phone. Hey, now's the time to practice catch them doing good. Here's what to be on the lookout for. Here's what to see. Say when you see it. Then we'll ask them, when would be a good time to check in with you? So they tell us. And then around that time, we just send a little notification to their phone saying, hey, how'd the day go? And we list out those elements of the schedule, right? A schedule is broken into routines. Routines are made up of activities, right? So it all comes preloaded, by the way. So a parent can customize it as much as they want. But what we know is that parents, you know, they're pretty typical routines, a morning, afternoon, and evening, pretty typical activities that make up each of those routines. It comes preloaded. So the parent, we're trying to reduce the amount of effort it takes to get started. Creates visual schedules for them, the posts, everything like that. But the check-ins just say, tell us a simple green, yellow, red rating, how each of these activities went. And then there's a quick way for them to collect ABC data if they'd like. Of course, it wouldn't be a behavior app without charts, right? So we got lots of charts. And we also have a little tool in there so that you can communicate with your clinician, or you can invite other caregivers to participate in a care team. So those are all the pieces that make up Attend. I'll tell you from our user surveys, the things that the parents like the most, you know, obviously the content, right? The content that they're very responsive to the content. The second are those coaching tips and notifications. That's something that parents really appreciate. Through the clinician portal, you can go in and see, one, are my parents completing the courses in the way I'd like for them to? How are they doing on the quizzes and the courses? Are they engaged? Are people picking behaviors they want to work on? Things like that. The clinicians can edit those things, push out, you know, updates to the parents. They can create their own custom reminders. You get visibility into what's going on. So that's really where we're trying to give the clinicians as a tool to not only deliver good family guidance, but to give the clinicians visibility into the parents' learning and what's going on at home when they're not there. Does that make sense, Kelly?
Oh yeah. No, I think it's absolutely brilliant. Like that capturing that moment the person is struggling, or again, even if just a reminder of like, hey, just catch them doing good right now. You know, having that availability is really nice because life happens, you get caught up in something. And also, you know, if they aren't able to follow through at that moment, then we can talk about that later. What do we need to do next time? You know, maybe this wasn't the most, you know, opportune time. What's a different time that we can try? So it allows them to be more in control of their own programming, which again, if we want generalization and maintenance and to fade ourselves back, what? I feel like that's kind of the road we need to go down.
Right. You know, there is a study that was done that looked at, it was in the health research, science research. And they looked at different types of prompts for patients, clients. Telephone calls, obviously mail, but you know, who responds to mail? Telephone calls, emails, notifications. It was off the charts. Notifications on phones is what prompts. It really triggers behavior. That's what Alyssa said. So that's part of our thinking around that, you know, in terms of what we wanted to do. And the other thing that, you know, just to kind of give you a quick overview of the content is, you know, broken up in 12 courses. It takes a parent about 30 minutes to go through, you know, one course from start to finish, but we know parents don't have 30 minutes. You know, maybe they have 5 minutes while they're standing in line somewhere. So the courses are broken into mini lessons, and mini lessons are usually about 5 minutes, no more than 10 minutes. And within a lesson, you know, they're going to read some content, there's interactive learning activities, and there's short little 1 minute videos. And the 1 minute videos are really designed to bring kind of real world examples of the things that we're talking about in the course to the parent. And then little knowledge check questions, things like that. So
I really like the mini lessons, because you even just said, you know, finding it within their day. I'm standing in line at Walmart and or Starbucks or whatever, and there's 20 people in front of me. Cool. I can read through this. So does it have, this is just a pure, my own curiosity question here. Does it have like an audio capability to where they could listen to it, or is it strictly they have to read it?
Right now, I just have to read, but that's something that we've been talking about.
Yeah.
To our earlier question, right? How do you because everyone has a little different reading style or learning style, right? So yeah, that's something we've been talking about, being able to download those and listen to it. I don't know if people would want to hear me talk about that for too long, but someone more of a radio.
You have a very lovely radio voice. So it's one of those, I feel like you could read me a bedtime story and I'd be like, oh yeah, I'm super relaxed now. So maybe not. Maybe we want to throw some.
Need somebody a little more exciting, maybe, you know.
Yeah, I was in the theater world. They would always say, "You've got a face for radio."
And now it's episodes, podcasts.
So yeah, those are things that we've looked at. We've looked at doing. You know, we really kind of look at our user data to really understand what people use, what they don't use. You know, it's interesting. With my last software company, the product was called Review 360. You know, this is back in the day when they would use point systems and level systems in school districts, particularly for kids with emotional behavioral disabilities. So we used to support the implementation of those, and which was generally terrible. And so when we would automate it, that's when the implementation would go well. And back then I used to say, because people would say, well, those point systems, level systems don't work. I said, well, they don't work generally because they're not implemented well, you know? And I'd say, I mean, who doesn't have a frequent flyer program, right? Everyone has a frequent flyer program. That's a points and level system, right? Where you accumulate mileage based upon how often you fly with people. And depending upon how many miles you get promoted to different levels. And when you're at different levels, you get different reinforcers, right? It's a excellent corporate model of those types of implementations. I said, but who would keep up with that if you had to do that by hand? You wouldn't, right? No one would. So one of the things that we did look at was how long would it take a student to get through the level system, right? And what we found was that after about 10 days of data, we could predict with a very high level of accuracy how many days it would take for the kid to complete the level system. And it kind of makes sense, right? Past behavior is the best predictor of future behavior. So if you have enough data to see how the kid is doing in the class and what their typical behavioral patterns were, you could kind of identify which kids who were in that class because probably all they needed was a little bit of structure, right? And more one-on-one attention, as opposed to a child who had more intensive needs and was more challenging. So I kind of looked at our content through that lens. And what we see is that when we get parents to the third course, which is creating routines and schedules, that's the completing it all goes up dramatically. And I also think part of that is how it takes some time for parents to see the benefits of the things that we're talking about. Right. So, you know, you don't see immediacy here with behavior. So I think it's kind of a parallel to that. And you asked a minute ago, Kelly, about how people typically use it. You know, if you think about traditional kind of, you know, parent training, whether it's using a curriculum like Ruby, which is, you know, we're going to cover one topic each week, or, you know, where we focus on kind of the problem of the week. You know, a lot of times what happens is we spend a lot of our parent training session didactically, right? Let me explain ideas to you and concepts and things like that. You know, probably a good 50 to 60% of our time is didactically focused on teaching concepts and ideas. And, you know, I'd say probably 10, 15% of that time is focused on, you know, building our relationships with the parents. The rest of that time is clinical problem solving. And, you know, that's where the magic happens, right? Is that is where you can take these ideas that we explain to people and you can help them learn how to adapt them, modify them so they work in their home. So one of the things that we get excited about with Attend is the clinicians will have the parents do the didactic portion on their own pace during the week, and then use that in session time with the parent around clinical problem solving. So if we can kind of flip that on its head, right, is that we're going to spend 50% of our time in session talking about how to apply what we're talking about to things that are going on in your day-to-day life, that the level of relevancy to the parent goes up dramatically, as opposed to just talking about concepts. Does that make sense? Yeah. So, and we, you know, we've looked at some of this data as well, where we've looked at what sort of impact do we see on family guidance, right? Because that's one of the, you know, our key performance indicators. Are we seeing an increase in the utilization of family guidance? And in one study, we were working with a group, the baseline utilization of family guidance, 97156, the billing of that, was about 15%. So of the hours that they were being authorized, about 15% of them were being delivered. I'll say that's a national trend. That's just not one organization. You know, you'll see estimates are like around 35%, but the number of hours that are utilized versus are authorized versus delivered, it's pretty low. So with Attend, we were able to get that utilization up to 55%. And so what that translates into is that you have a parent who went from receiving about 30 minutes a month of family guidance, which is the check-in that Alan mentioned, to about 2.5 hours. And so we're real excited about that type of result. The insurance companies that we're working with are real excited about that. You know, we know that the payers are putting more quality metrics around this. They're expecting more parent engagement. They're also trying to figure out how they can help promote family guidance, because we all know, right, if parents aren't engaged with us, we're not going to get the results, the sustained results we know we can get from the work that we're doing with the families.
Say, if the environment's not ready for behavior analysis, then we're not doing anything. We're just going to spin our wheels. You know, you have to lay the foundation.
Right. Yeah, exactly. And I think, you know, when we talk to people, and you and I mentioned this earlier, but a lot of times what people will say is parents just don't seem interested, right? Alan and I have done some research together with this. Hey, you know, what are some of the biggest challenges you have in delivering family guidance? You know, folks will say, well, parents don't seem interested, or they're not engaged, or they don't follow through. And I always take that as an indicator that what we're doing with parents doesn't seem helpful to them. When I was in graduate school, you know, I had a major professor of mine, and who would tell me, he was a mentor to me, he said, you know, we would give people checklists, right, of, hey, complete this before you come and see me. And there was one section on the checklist that would ask the parent to describe their strengths, right? And when that section had very little information in it, he'd say, that's the parent that's most in distress, right? And so, and I always remembered that. And I think about that when you're talking to parents and they don't, you know, if they're not interested in what you're talking about, is it that they're not interested in family guidance or the stuff, the help, or is it what maybe we're talking about isn't hitting home for them? And so I think, you know, how do we ask that question differently from, you know, how best could we help you get some relief at home? If you ask that question, generally parents, you know, open up. And I think that the other side of that coin with the parents is another aspect of the studies we did is we asked people, and Alan referred to this earlier, out of how many of you guys have actually completed a course on family guidance? So we collected data on about 176 clinicians. Only one of those 176 clinicians actually had a course in family guidance. 20% of them had it covered as a topic. So 80% of people didn't even have it covered as a topic in their programs. You know, it was just through supervision and things like that. We asked a little bit about it post-certification, and 50% of the folks said that their only real training was self-study. And so when I put my old university hat on, I understand why that happens, right? Because you only have 21 hours in your curriculum, and you have to spend your semester credit hours, you know, in the way that you can try to deliver the most bang for the buck. And the other thing we know is like 50% of the people in our survey received all their training online, so they didn't receive anything in person, anything like that. So, you know, going back to my earlier comment, only 15% of the college educations had any sort of training around classroom management. You know, the same thing is true for our colleagues out there, is that most of our colleagues are not receiving training in any of this stuff. The only training they're getting is on the job training, just like those teachers I mentioned. Now, how does that translate? Well, what that translates into is that people don't necessarily always have a clinical framework for how to work with parents. You know, we were talking at the beginning of our discussion around this idea that if a kid, you know, if a parent brought a child in and the three of us were sitting in on the conference, we'd probably have a similar set of hypotheses around what's going on. We'd ask similar questions. We want more information around similar things. That's because we share a clinical framework on how to work with kids, right? We share that framework. If you don't have that framework when you're working with a parent, you don't really know what to do, right? And it's easy to feel overwhelmed by it. It's easy to feel, and frankly, we all remember when we're early clinicians, right? It's easy to feel like you're a bit of an imposter here, right? Maybe you don't have kids. How do I supposed to help someone who, you know, I'm not really sure what to do. Well, I'd much rather work with my kid, with a kid, because I know what to do there, right? I have a clinical framework for that. I've spent a lot of hours doing that even before I sat for my certification. So I have a framework for that. For parents, they don't have, for parent training, they don't have that framework. And that's where I think sometimes we, as you know, people that are in the clinical leadership roles, they underestimate the challenge around not having that framework for parents. And we just say, oh, well, you're just not doing what you're supposed to be doing, right? And so, well, my clinicians, they just don't like doing it. Well, maybe they would like doing it if they had a better framework for it. And so. So that's one of the benefits of using a program like Ruby, like Attent, right? Is it gives you a clinical framework that's consistent with what we know from the evidence literature are the important skills and techniques to teach parents. So I'll pause from my soapbox there for a second, unless you can comment. But those are some of my kind of general impressions.
Pardon the interruptions, listeners, but if you are listening for continuing education units, here's the first of your two key words. Your first word is benefits. B-E-N-E-F-I-T-S. There are many benefits to utilizing technology. Benefits.
Oh, I have so many thoughts. I've just been like, I had to switch to a separate page. I dig the clinical framework, especially because I not a lot of us have training. You might get like a parent training class if you can have that as an elective. But again, you're limited on how many hours you have unless you stay for 6 years and they tell you you have to leave. I mean, if you want to do those things, totally. Yeah, I mean, playing is fine, but at the same time, also be smart about it. But, you know, the experiences and the feedback, but that's, you know, that's one university and not every university offers the same coursework. Or put it this way. when we talk about becoming a BCBA, part of our, you know, procedures, we have to go through the verified course sequence. And right now, that's not part of it. You know, we have a, you have a behavior intervention programming, typically, like you have that kind of a course. But how often, and I don't know, I would love for people to give feedback on this of, you know, when you're creating programs in this course and everything, are you having the discussion about what does it look like when you actually have to go sit down with the parent and say, hey, I need you to totally upheave your life and do everything I tell you to do. Also, by the way, I'm like 26 years old and things like that. Like, very, one of my very first jobs, I had, again, had no, not real framework or anything, but I was like, I have a counseling background. Like, I know how to do these things. I know I'm a behavior analyst. I got this. And all I did was I asked the mom, I said, well, you know, when the kids get home, you know, how, you know, are you engaging with them or are you asking them to do things? And the woman started bawling. And I was like, this is how I get fired. This is the beginning and end of my career. This is just what's going to happen now. Yeah. And thankfully, it worked out really well. We bonded. She was lovely. Their family was wonderful. She got it. It was that, but thankfully she got it, because otherwise, yeah, it could have been very bad because I didn't have a framework to put it under. I'm just going in kind of on the seat of my pants, like, well, I know I should ask about strengths and weaknesses, but I don't know, quote unquote, in what order or what my checklist should look like. So that's why I like having something like this. And I know, Alan, you and I bonded in, grad school and undergrad with the constructional approach and Israel Gold Diamond. And this falls very in line with that. So, I mean, while we can, you know, we're collaborating across these different modalities and different professions and everything, like the science is still very solid. And I love being able to bring in multiple evidence-based practices. So on the behavioral side then, Alan, so like, what are you seeing? Are you, to clarify, are you teaching other BCBAs how to use this? Are you implementing it as well? Like, where do you fall?
A little bit of both, right? Like, so I have implemented the program with a parent using telehealth and seen a lot of success. What I'll say, you know, Stuart talks a lot and we talk a lot about providing that framework and giving, like, really, I think that may be the more behavioral piece of that, right? Is providing that piece. I talk a lot about really on kind of that ACT, acceptance and commitment kind of relational frame piece where I'm able to take a 10 behavior, and I do a lot of training with clinicians and just kind of taking a look at what, how they think about the family guidance that, that they're bringing. What is their perception of what they're doing with family guidance and their approach? And you do see that, like, overwhelmed that I have no idea what I'm doing. Oh my God. And it's just escape and avoidance behavior, right? Like, if a parent will just cancel, that would be so good because I don't know what to do and I'm so nervous about what I'm going to do there, right? So, of course, they take that first out that they can. But with what you get with a 10 behavior is something to connect on, something to both have a shared perception of, something to discuss, right? Because the relationship building piece of is quite often what is missing is what are really high level social skills from clinicians. And it's, they're able to develop relationships in their own personal life with their peers that are quite often, like you say, you know, younger folks, like in their mid to, you know, young 20s. And this, you know, where I'm straight out of grad school and now I'm going to tell this 40-year-old woman what to do with her children. And I have been told that I know everything as a scientist. I'm a scientist. I know all. Let me tell you about your behavior, you know? And we don't stop to think about the parental stressors that are occurring there and saying, what could I do that's best here? What do you need me to do? And you know, they, or they come in and they're just very upset. Let me tell you everything that's wrong. And as a younger clinician, you're like, oh my God, that's really hard. I don't know. Right. So how they may not even stay with what's going on with the kid. Like, there is so much around the life of parenting a child with autism that's bigger than, you know, I can't get you to not tantrum at Walmart. Right. It is all encompassing, and just being able to come in with that kind of acceptance of what's going on in that person's life is so hard. Like, providing a technology that kind of takes some pressure out of me sitting here and telling you everything about reinforcement and letting you consume that on your own time, so that whenever we do come into session, maybe we're able to get through some more of that and get into how that works in real life as a part of, like Stuart says, with a problem solving piece. But then once we identify what that looks like in your real life, then we're able to kind of really do some what is real behavior analytic work around that and BST practice. Like, let me model what that might look like in this situation with the idiosyncratic behavior that's occurring in your life. Now you can practice that and I can give you some feedback. One of the features that is so important within a 10 behavior is them being able to record that tantrum that they saw and upload it for you to take a look at and video what they did. So you're able to give them some like asynchronous coaching of, now what you might have done there might have helped a little more, but it gives you, it brings that confidence and the ability to take the perspective of the parent and really validate their stress in a way that doesn't seem condescending and just like, you know, I know everything and I'm here to tell you what to do, right? It gives, in empowers the parent because they're designing it along with you. And with a 10 behavior, you have the ability to work on that simultaneously with the parent, right? Like, you picked these behaviors and maybe your definition of Billy gets mad, that doesn't tell us a whole lot, but it gives me something to look at. And now we can look at it together and talk more about what really operationally looking at the behavior is, so that we can get a little bit more meaningful function and deduce a little bit more, you know, effective approach, because we're able to dive a little bit deeper without increasing your parental stress, right? Because I think what we see in the literature is you get a huge increase in parental stress when you jump in there with behavioral parent training quite often, when we want to kind of be able to pull some of that out and get you to focus on one thing at a time. And using technology helps kind of let's focus on what is the thing that if we did, we could eliminate, you know, just a little bit of the stress during your day if we could teach your child. And at least they know that we're focusing on that and we're working towards that. And there's a roadmap for how we're going to get there, right? Because I think that having that plan is super vital. So I spend a lot of, you know, a lot more time working with clinicians right now on getting them there, because really my passion is to kind of change some of that perspective in the field of who our client is. It is so child focused that we forget that the environment is what drives the child's behavior, not just the environment that's in our clinic or in our in-home session, but everything that's going on out there. And we really have to be looking at that. And so being able to connect with clinicians all over the place around this technology helps me be able to get in a position to mentor people a little bit more and say, why are you doing it that way? And really ask them those hard questions that help to shift their perspective and their relational frames around what they're doing. And quite often, I think folks, you know, make sure they're getting into this for the right reasons, right? Because not all the time do I think that some of these folks are, somebody said, you could probably make okay money if you get a BCBA and go to work. There's not always a huge amount of passion to jump in there. And then once they realize, oh, I don't get to just work with kids. I loved working with kids. When you're a BCBA, and I think it's, there's a study that talks a lot about this, and maybe Jonathan Tarbox, and he talks a lot how 90% of the people that we're working with are highly vocal, verbal adults as BCBAs. You're not working with children anymore. You've got to advance your social skills to that level of being able to not just talk in your behavior analytic terms. Your high horse won't function anymore, right? Like, you're going to have to be collaborative or we will not be successful. And when I attend behaviors, just it gives you that framework to step into that world of here's a way for you to learn to do it, so I don't have to be here forever. And giving that parent that you can figure this out and you can do it, because without that confidence, what is their motivation to be interested in parent training, right? Like, why do they want to work with you if you just make them feel like they don't know what they're doing? That's the perception that we leave folks with quite often. So I want, you know, when I'm working with a parent, I'm always trying to get them to the point where they're telling me what we need to do next, right? Like, you just learned that content. Now, what do we need to do? Tell me what we need to do next. What's your kid doing? Because you're the expert. I'm just going to try to loosely coach you through it in a way that brings you to be able to find that answer for the next behavior when I'm not there. And Stuart calls it a lot, and he talked a little bit earlier about playing behavioral whack-a-mole, right? Like, they're going to come in, and during session, every week we come in and you've got a different story about the last crazy thing that happened. And we sit and talk about what to do when that crazy thing happens. But that crazy thing may only really occur one or two times. It may not ever reoccur. But there may be something in that response to class that happens 100 times, right? Like, but in the same function, you know, different weapon used to attack you with, right? So how do we continue to, you know, minimize the amount of reinforcement for that behavior that we didn't want to occur? So, you know, long answer to the question of what behavioral has become is something to step out of just a little bit and step back and look at, you know, why does my data matter, right? Like, what am I taking data on? And then we're looking at medical necessity. Like, what are our payers wanting us to do? And what are we able, what, how do we solve the problem for that? Because parent training and medical necessity, they don't, like, what we're teaching the kid isn't, you know, we're ameliorating the symptomology of autism, like, is what we're supposed to be doing, right? Like, how does that fit into an ABA program? And foundational skills are definitely where it starts. And I find that with giving that structure to start with, those helps you build on that next most important thing with that parent, because they start to realize what's really truly important to them. And you get some real values identification of their own, of what they're perceiving. Because, and I know you've been here before, I think we've discussed cases like this where you come in and the parent wants you to teach the kid to read, and they've, like, are on the floor engaging in some really, like, intense self-stimulatory behavior, and they don't have any real verbal communication skills, and their priority is, I want my kid to read. Or you know, I think that one of the more interesting ones where I just had to kind of say, okay, let's think about that, is where they wanted their kid to write their name, and the kid had no form of communication yet. And I was like, we got to know where to start to reach that goal. We've got to start way back here with what the letters are, right? Like, receptive identification of letters, like that, learning to able to tactfully and carefully explain to that parent. There are so much foundation before we get to some of this stuff that seems important now. And if we're able to provide that kind of framework, maybe we can shift what's most important and give us enough rapport and relationship with you as a parent to be able to talk more about where your kid is 5 years down the road, right? Like, what, because I mean, at the end of the day, we want that whole entire family to reach their full potential as a family. That should be our goal as a clinician, to reach their full potential there. We don't always know what that is, right? But that should be our goal. There's a lot to get to that. And there's a lot that me and you, full potential, may mean something different because we value different things. And being respectful with that family's culture whatever that may be, that idiosyncratic family culture of this is what's most important for us. You know, this is what, because, you know, we always have to be looking with a kid 5 years down the road, and working with adults, that becomes very apparent to you very quickly. That if you counted back 5 years from the 30-year-old that's in a group home and thought, what could we have taught 5 years ago that would have this behavior not occur, right? What could we have done when they were a kid that would have this behavior not occur? And so if you're able to have a framework, jump in there, teach foundational skills, build those relationships all around something to connect on, you're really able to start carefully shifting those perspectives too. And so that's a really high level way to start thinking about something that is meant to come in as simple as possible, right? But for me, that's a tool that gives me all the strength in the world to be able to empower the parent and shift perspectives into this may be what's most important, and help them discover that, not tell them or you know, try to harangue them into my own values, but help them find what's really going to be most important and effective for them in the long run.
So there's multiple things that I want to attack on this. One of them is, I think I've talked about it before on the pod, and I know I've posted links to it, but if you haven't checked out like The Insular Mother, and I'm sure that you've read it, with Waller in like 1980 something.
Okay. So Waller sounds, yes, super
Waller's
familiar,
The Insular Mother.
Sure.
And one of the things that they found was that, and then, I mean, again, this is an old study, but like we can look at the data even today and you're going to see very similar things, where these caregivers, the only people they come in contact with are typically telling them what to do. And that's really unfortunate. And it's coming from supposedly reinforcing environments, not just professional therapies and everything. And oftentimes the behavior person kind of gets stuck because we're usually there a little bit longer than everybody else. We're a little bit more, I don't want to say invested, but we've got, I don't say a bigger chunk of the pie, because that's kind of, you know, not true either, but behaviors everywhere. We see systems, you know, it's all encompassing. So we spend a little bit more time with families. And are we being the same and all we do is dictate, give advice, or are we taking that second to pause and let them, you know, have a moment, cry, be upset, go through, because emotions are valid. And that's one of the things that we even teach with, you know, our humans that we work with, and the animals too, you know, but like your organism, if they are having an emotion, that is a thing. It is happening right now. It's neither good nor bad. What we do with it, you know, that's where we can start to move into, do we want this to occur more or less? But I really dig the way that this kind of technology can help separate and have that boundaries and kind of that stimulus control. So, you know, they're getting the more educational academic side of things on their own time, you know, and then they can come back and have a discussion with you that is very purposeful. And then we have like a debrief time too. And so that's very purposeful, but you are still engaging in connecting moments. And now it might not be like, oh, how was your day today? But something like, hey, how was your, like, how'd the schedule go? You know, that's still, you're acknowledging them as a person. And if they come back and say, everything is on fire right now and we had nothing done and it's all terrible, you're still going to have that moment of like, okay, we can talk about this. I'm glad you're still alive kind of deal. But it keeps on the clinician side. We don't talk about it a lot in the behavior world, but you've got transference and counter transference. And it is something that people really should look into when you are in a helping profession, because as you get older and go through experiences, those experiences can pop up in your brain as you're working with somebody else. And it's like, oh, snap. So you can find yourself, like you mentioned, having these emotional responses of like, oh my gosh, you know, I really hope their kid's sick today. You know, do I have a fever? I think my car's almost out of gas. Like, you're coming up with things because it's aversive on our end. So how do we get around that? Well, we play with technology. You know, we're behavior analysts. There's a solution for things. We problem solve. So I dig all of that chunk. Second chunk is the engagement of the parents. And again, that whole prompting and seeing, you know, having the explanation of, I want you to have this big goal. I love it for you, but we need to get these ones. But you're also still showing and you're shaping. That's the big thing. It's like, we're shaping at this point. We're shaping parents' behaviors. We're shaping the clients' behaviors. The parents are helping to shape the clients' behaviors. And you have this nice, you know, I think it's the Hoberson sphere, where it's a little plastic things and it explodes out into the big thing. Anyway, I'll have to post a picture of it, because that is a terrible, terrible description. I'm fascinated by them. They're kind of a fidget toy. So, but it's going from the very small little ball, spiky ball, and then it explodes into a big, not a spiky ball. And that's kind of what we do as behavior analysts is, we can see how this behavior, this child should, be able to have a vocal, have to have a functional communication system, And how do we go about doing this? Well, what is the purpose of that? Well, it's not just so that they can mand. It's also that they can have independent conversations because this is a cusp. This should put you into contact with new and better things. You know, once you have this one, then we can go to this one. And then, what does it look like at the home? You know, it means that mom and dad don't have to drop everything and go take care of something, things like that. What does it look like in the community? We just keep expanding while still keeping the science in, I think, a very clean, nice box. And in a good box. This is the one time I will say staying in a box is a good thing.
At least don't.
Sorry. So, go ahead. So to kind of shift gears, we've talked a little bit about success and things like that. And so parents have had these comments and they really appreciate these things. You can track how their data and their progress is going and the coursework and everything. But, overall success. So what are the changes that you guys are seeing, I guess, kind of across those levels, like child behavior, is there improvement there? Is there, successful implementation or more successful implementation of these programs that are being put in? And then kind of, maybe a little bit fluffy, the family dynamics, because that's always a great thing when that shift starts to happen of like things start to make progress and are getting a little bit better. You don't feel as tense when you walk in. The air is not quite as thick when you go into the certain door and you're like, ooh, is it going to be a good day? Like you walk in, you're like, oh, something's up, man. Like there's a levity to the environment kind of deal. So what kind of measures are you guys taking on that?
Mm-hmm. Well, so and that's a good question, Kelly, because we've been looking at, we look at, let's say four different things when it comes to, how are people progressing? What are the outcomes we're getting? One, we look at, are parents actually completing the content, right? Are they completing the content for one? Two, are they demonstrating a comprehension of the concepts, right, through the quizzes? Three, are they engaged? So we look at, are they, when they finish a course and they complete what we call a follow-up activity. And that's an example follow-up activity is, we talk about the importance of creating routines and schedules. Now let's review, let's figure out what a schedule would look like for you guys. Right, so there's a little follow-up activity where they can say which of these things are part of their day, which ones aren't, when do things start, when do they end. That's a follow-up activity that's really designed to contextualize how to implement a schedule around the house. So we look at the completion of follow-up activities, right? So are they actually doing those things? And then the last thing we look at is the actual behavioral data, right? So we look at like what we call a check-in. So the check-in is that something that pops up at the end of the day and we'll say, okay, so like, for example, the morning routine is, we're getting up, we're getting our school items together, we're going to have breakfast and we're going to leave for school. So for each of those activities that make up the morning routine, how do they go? Like a green is got done without any sort of issues. A yellow was needed some prompting. A red might be there was an incident that occurred during that activity. So they'll complete that for each activity across those routines. And then we chart of those different activities, what percentage of those ratings were green versus yellow versus red? Because what that does is it creates a heat map, so to say, of where our problems are. Right? And it's similar to what, like a home situations questionnaire, which is a questionnaire that you ask parents to complete. How challenging are these different things around the house? So it's our way of mapping where we need to focus our clinical effort and time. Because you'll see, 70% of the ratings for household chores are red, right? So obviously we need to focus there. We're getting the child to get his stuff together, go to school. So we look at that data and then we look at the incident data. So we also look at, how often the incidents are occurring, what time of day are they occurring? Who's involved? What do the parents think the function of the behavior is? So there's the actual behavioral data that we look at as well. And then we also are promoting skill development. So, for example, the parent will go in as a follow-up activity. They'll identify different types of skills they'd like to teach their child that would help the child be more independent. And it could be things like, dressing, hygiene, meals, things like that. So they look at those list of ones, and within dressing, it might be, you know, I'd really, if you could learn how to put a shirt on, right, that would help me a lot. And so they picked that one. And then each of those skills, this is something that Alan did. And by the way, I should have said this earlier, but Alan's a director of clinical care and quality assurance for us. So Alan works with the practices that are using Attend on their implementation, but he's also played a major role in development with us. So Alan, you know, we sat down and figured out what are those skills that we really need to help parents get started with. Then we have a task analysis for each one. And then we ask the parent, and they learn about how to teach skills in the course. And then we ask them, when would be a good time to teach your child how to put on a shirt without buttons? They tell us, and then in Attend, they can come in and do some quick data entry around how that went. So we can look at the data around their actual skill development, right? Of the steps that make up, you know, putting on a shirt without buttons, what percentage of steps are they able to complete on their own versus which ones do they need prompting with, which ones they are stuck on? So we look at that sort of data within the app. And then the other things that, if you step back a second and you ask that question, you know, from the empirical evidence around Ruby, where is Ruby particularly effective? And in the clinical trial they've done, they show that it improves behavior really. And it's particularly effective for noncompliance, temper tantrums, hyperactive, impulsive types of responding, mild aggression. Also in attention. So those are the behaviors that the clinical studies have been doing to show that it's particularly effective. It's also effective for promoting skill development. And interesting, you know, they've also looked at parenting stress, and you'll see improvement around parenting stress. So what we're currently involved in doing is taking some of the studies that have been done with Ruby and then doing similar analysis with Attend. Right? Do we see similar results? You would expect that you would, because the content's the same. The delivery system may be a little bit different, but so we're looking at that, and we are working with a couple. You know, we're working with a couple of insurance companies. One of them is really interested to see how helping parents impacts things like healthcare spend. And do you see reductions in ER visits, for example? Like, the medical director of one of the insurance companies told me, well, those behaviors you just listed are some of the top reasons why parents bring their kids to the ER, right? So if we can help show an improvement on managing those behaviors, then we should see reductions in those sorts of things. So those are all that we've got a couple different studies we're doing, aside from looking at increases around the utilization of paratraining.
So, in kind of the generalization mode of things, what other areas are you potentially looking at? Because I could see this being implemented across, you know, day hubs, group homes, residential facilities, you know, things like that. Like, there's a pretty broad impact here that could be made.
Dog.
Yes.
Dog training. We were talking about dogs earlier. You know, it's interesting you say that, because we're working with Nationwide Children's Hospital out of Ohio, and we're talking to them about using Attend in primary care. And so as a tool for pediatricians to provide parents, they're particularly interested in for ADHD, because it's such a major issue, and how we can modify what we're doing for that type of service delivery model. But, you know, I think your question, you know, is good, because I really think about Attend as a child behavioral health platform. And, you know, we all know that there's not enough providers out there. And it's, the truth is, it's going to be really hard to create providers to meet the demand for services. The one people that we can help who are there with their kids all the time are their parents. So, you know, I think about, you know, creating content and programs to help parents who have kids with depression that are anxious. So, you know, we've talked about developing a version of this for older kids on the spectrum. So, you know, because as you get older, you know, some of those self-management types of skills is what we focus on with kids. And so helping give them the content to help them understand what you're doing and the coaching tips for them when they're in the moment, they need to do these things. We've been talking to some people in foster care about adapting some of the content. So we're really kind of think of Attend as a child behavioral health platform that's geared at promoting better family support, and whether that's for individuals who are in inpatient settings or receiving intensive treatment in ABA or in primary care. That's really kind of where we're looking.
I mean, really, it's environmental management. So whether it's a classroom management or it's a psychiatric facility, like a lot of, you know, we have to look and be least to most intrusive. And what is the least way that we can be intrusive? You manage the environment. You tweak things there first before I ever go in to teach this person specifically something, because it really could just be something else in the environment. So I dig that a lot. So I don't know, I may be picking y'all's brains later about this. You know,
well, you know, we would always say in the schools, hey, you got to help the big people if you want to help the little people, right?
So then I guess kind of an extension question is looking at, because technology, you know, is everywhere pretty much now. I mean, I had Wi-Fi on a mountaintop in, you know, Vietnam over the summer, which I was not expecting to have. And so, you know, right now, are you only working with families that are within like the area that you guys are, or have you looked at working with, you know, collaborating? So the family lives in like Florida or Virginia, and you know, having that, because it's an app, you know, it's a website, so yeah. You don't have to have necessarily that face to face. I mean, yes, it's good, but you know, in certain cases.
Well, that's a great question. You know, we're working with, you know, for us, we're a software company. And so, you know, we're providing a solution for providers. We do have some parents that use Attend on their own. But I'd say 90% of our parents are working with a clinician. And so our clients typically are ABA practices, behavioral health practices in general, pediatric hospital systems. We're also been talking with Medicaid. In some of the different states around offering Attend as a solution for families on the wait list. And we did a demonstration project in Georgia where Alan worked with a family whose nearest provider was 90 miles away. And so they just couldn't get access to services. And so, you know, it was a parent consultation model where she was given the app and then she would meet with Alan once a week and he'd work with her through the content. So I really think that, you know, particularly for families that are in less, you know, urban areas where there's just a lack of services, you know, us being able to partner with providers who want to jointly be able to offer solutions to, you know, payers or perhaps employers who have families that are more rural areas where they can't get help. So we've been talking about that as well.
One more pause for your second keyword. Your second word is timing, T-I-M-I-N-G. Technology can improve the timing of prompts. Timing. That's really cool. I like, you know, I always say take over the world, small revolution. You know, these behavioral butterfly effects, because it's, you know, the shift back in the focus now with the field, I'm going to go in my little soapbox now for a hot minute, captive audience. So is, you know, we've kind of lost, I think, some of the science behind it. Like so often I come across people and they say, oh, what do you do? And like, I'm a behavior analyst. Oh, so you do the autism thing. And I'm like, yep, sure don't. That's not the same thing as behavior analysis. And really this discussion has become a lot more involved, which I am enjoying, because it was a huge shock to the system when I left grad school and I was like, oh, the rest of the world does not think this way. Yeah. So now that we are having this discussion about, you know, the science is a science. It can be applied to working with someone with a particular diagnosis, regarding, you know, ADHD, schizophrenia, like it's it's a science, and it's just how we apply it. And we can also apply it to how do we incorporate technology into things? How do we incorporate corporations and organizations? And we see those behavior analytic principles apply the whole way down. You know, what makes the insurance company happy? Well, they don't want to have to pay out as much money. So how do they get to keep their money? Well, we do this over here. And, you know, being able to see how all of those threads and contingencies overlap and connect, and oftentimes compete with each other, which is, you know, what I think is nice about having something clean like this, is it really nicely shows the benefits across the board of, hey, here's how it's going to affect child, here's how it's going to affect their family, their peers, their school, and you can see this greater, you know, long-term, a lot faster, I think, than us going in typically, which is like, all right, so cool. If we go through this and I'll, you know, do my assessment and we'll pick out some skills and like maybe in 6 years, things will look okay. Yeah, that's a little bit disheartening. So this, I think it sets it up a lot more successfully for the parent across multiple dynamics. So that's freaking awesome. I know, I think I had one more question, at least one more question. Maybe I don't. That may have been it. Okay. Other thoughts then, because I'm kind of looking at time and I want to be respectful. But this has been super, super fun. So I guess really, this was the last one I had, was the barriers to this. So we've talked a lot about the pros to this. I mean, I just had a nice little moment right there. So what are some of the issues that you guys have come across? I mean, you know, my first thing would be I break technology on the regular. Alan and I went to school together. He knows I was banned from the copy machine. I'm still banned from the copy machine. There's been like three. I'm not allowed to touch any of them. I'm magic. So aside from things like kind of like that, because that I get, we know resources we get, but what are some of the more like, I guess, impactful things that you guys have come across? Like I could, you know, see someone going through and like, hey, I want to teach my kid a skill, but like, it's not on your checklist. So, you know, that might be something, but you know, what are some of the other barriers that you guys have maybe come across?
I think the biggest thing is that it's really the issue of helping the clinicians kind of think through how this fits within your clinical workflow, right? So I think that's the thing that's probably most important. I've been working in kind of the intersection between behavior and technology for 20 years or so. And when I very first started doing this in school districts, we would teach people how to use a mouse, right? So because people weren't always comfortable using a mouse. And so, you know, the barriers today are much different than they were there. But the thing that's most consistent is that I think you have three groups of users who adopt new technology, right? So you have one group who are super excited about new technology. They jump right on board. They start using it. They think of like how to use it to help them make their jobs easier in three different ways you never even thought about before. So those are the people you love working with, right? Because they're going to really help you kind of figure out where your value is even more than you think. Then you do have people who get told, well, you got to do this, and they just don't want to do it, right? That's the group that are kind of resistant. The first group, love working with, they're super excited about it. The third group, it's really hard to get them motivated until they see firsthand where the benefit is. The middle group is where you make your impact. And the middle group are people who are willing to do it because they see the value of it, but they got a lot of stuff going on. So when they run into an obstacle, they don't necessarily want to spend the time problem solving like the innovative group does. They're like, okay, if this doesn't fit with my clinical workflow, yeah, I can see I'll be beneficial, but I don't have the time to deal with it. So that's something that Alan spends a lot of time with those people, figuring out how do we fit within your clinical workflow. And I think that's, you know, that's where we're spending a lot of our time, you know, as a company, is how can we help. We all here, maybe the people all listening, can understand the value of this. But how do we help, you know, deliver that value so it makes my life as a BCBA easier? We have the other hurdle, I think, sometimes barrier, and this is true around technology in general, I'd say, is that you know, we can understand the clinical value of doing things, but the business people don't always understand the business value of doing something. And sometimes from a clinical perspective, you know, we can talk all day long about why something's important, why parent training is important clinically, right? And why attend might help with that. But for the business people, when, you know, our economic world has changed over the last couple of years, and there's more pressure on everyone to be able to meet our needs, our expectations, and I come on, well, this is just like another cost. Why do we need to do this? Right. So, and going back to that study we did, what has helped with that was we were able to show that translating an increase in family guidance going from 15% utilization to 55%, that created net new revenue of $152 a month per client. So if we can deliver an ROI for the business leaders, then that helps them say, oh, okay, I understand it's good clinically. Now I can see how financially we can benefit from this as well. So having that, I think, helped with some of our implementations, particularly the larger ABA practices where they feel more financial, you know, of a microscope to check. Because look, at the end of the day, there's, you know, always debates around, you know, then that sort of thing. But the CEO Pearson, two CEOs ago, she used to say that, you know, our profits support our mission. And that really is true. You know, in order for us to be able to deliver on our mission, we need to be able to sustain ourselves. And so I think those are the two things, you know, Kelly, from us trying to get this implemented is, how can we integrate with this within your clinical workflow? We have good models for that now too. And now we have a good ROI story for the business leaders around it.
That's really cool. And their thoughts, Alan?
Oh, as far as barriers go, right? Like, and I don't think that I have a whole lot different to say than what Stuart already summed up, right? Like, it is getting folks and figuring out where they fit into those three groups and what the variables are that are keeping them from being in that innovator group, right? Like, is it just because you don't want to? Is it because now you have to learn to do something new? Is it? And I think Stuart often says people don't really love change, right? Like, and I think that there's a big shift around family guidance in general and its importance, and that payers are wanting it more, and that people are starting to realize, wow, that's something I'm going to have to do. And that helps us out, of course, right? But at the same time, they don't want to change the way they've always done stuff. We get very settled into those frames and ideas and routines. So if I had to add one more thing, it's just shifting people out of that routine of what they've always done before, right? Like, this is something that can really help you. Just check it out. Just give me one good, a good college try. Get in there and give it what you can and if it doesn't work, you come tell me why and I'll fix that, right? And letting them know there's somebody to support them. But that's it, really. It's getting it into workflow and in the ideas is something that you may need, or that maybe you don't need but you want, because it's going to take a lot of pressure off of, you know, response effort from what you're already doing. So
And in that vein, you know, one thing, you know, we'd love to offer listeners is, they're interested in just checking it out with a client, interested in checking out a 10 with the client, if they'll reference Atypical, you know, and they go to our website, there's a little, you know, info, contact us. If they reference Atypical there, we'll be happy to set them up with a clinician account, give them a couple licenses for free. So, you know, if they're interested, go to our website. It's www.attendbehavior.com, and shoot us a little message note and reference the podcast.
That like seriously makes my day, yo. Like, thanks. All right, we talk a lot about our verbal communities, and it's been really fun to start to have some of them develop a little bit. Like, people have reached out by email. So like having this kind of collaboration, it just makes my little science heart happy. I just want humans to get along and be good. It's not a lot to ask. Anyway, but I wanted to kind of caveat with one of the things you said, Alan, on like, you know, some people don't, a lot of people don't like having that change. Like, I've always done it this way. And then you have kind of the flip side of it where you have the exact opposite effect where it's like every 6 months, there's some new technology that, oh, we've got this new data collection. So I'm going to throw this at you. And like, and then it still has problems because it was the shiniest and the coolest thing and whatever. And then it's like, oh no. And so, you know, a year later we get a new one and, you know, being able to come in and have a conversation from the get-go of like, no, this has been tested for a bit, you know, not just, it's not the new brand, like shiny brand new thing. Like this has, you know, actual foundational, and good results and everything. So that's awesome.
Oh, for sure. I'm glad that you point that out because quite often, especially larger ABA companies that are, they're trying to adjust to our evolving compliance environment, right? Like you need this, you're supposed to be doing that. This is what your treatment plan goals should look like. You know, whatever that may be that changes from week to week, it's almost like a change that involves software is just more noise. And you have to say, no, really, if you'll use this, it'll work. This is like, it's not just going to go away and I'm not going to leave you alone until I make it work. Like I won't let it go, right? Because that's just, I don't give up ever. But, you know, making the headway with that of, and we have seen that and actually heard that feedback is, you know, I just thought this was another thing and it would go, you know, it'll eventually go away. But once they see that, if you can get them to get it out to a parent that wants to engage and the parent starts to engage, then they're like, oh, well, this is something that's going to be really cool here. And the parents getting their hands on the content will start to drive the clinicians getting involved too. So that's always super fun to watch happen.
I mean, natural motivation. How do we fade ourselves out? I want to get away from contrived reinforcers. I want to get away from me clapping and telling you how good of a job you did. Like, no, there needs to be this other motivation that takes in. Ah, so freaking cool. So freaking cool. Yeah. Okay. So last thing I will ask you guys is if people want to reach out. So Stuart, you already gave the website, but if you want to give any other contact information, how people can reach you on the interwebs.
They can reach us through the website. It's probably the best way. They could you can always email me. It's Stuart@attendbehavior.com. That's Stewart@attendbehavior.com or Alan.Fulbright@attendbehavior.com. So you could, and that's two L's. So yeah, they can always email us directly or just go to the website, check it out and shoot us a message through the internet.
All right. Well, I think I'm good on questions. I have to look at my notes real quick. But I mean, if anything, we'll follow up later. We'll continue chatting because this was really fun. And I'm really excited to see some of the things and places you go. So I'm looking forward to that. Are you guys looking at publishing any of the research?
Yeah. We're actually one of the things that we want to do is get some publish the results.
Very cool. So I look forward to that. So anyways, with that, my loves, happy Wednesday again. It's the middle of the week. Well done. You made it this far. You only got a couple days left. Holidays, if you're celebrating, holidays are over soon. So that's what I'm looking forward to is when this middle of January sounds great. this time of the year is not my favorite, but that's okay. It's fine. It's just stressful for everybody. But anyways, I love you all, dear humans. Be kind to each other. Be nice. Go out and do something awesome for somebody today. And we'll see you later. Bye.
Bye.
Bye. Thanks, Kelly.
Thank you for listening to this adventure of the Atypical Behavior Analyst. Check out the website, atypicalba.com, for more episodes, references, and to purchase CEUs. To stay up to date, like and follow us on social media. Just search Atypical Behavior Analyst. If you like the show, please rate and leave us a review. And if you want to support the show but don't need CEUs, you can help by clicking the Buy Us a Coffee link in the show notes. So until next time, listeners, grab your towel, keep exploring, and we'll see you in the fringes.
I don't know about you, but I always look forward to the preview clip. So, as promised, here is a clip from our next episode 52. Give it a listen, and we'll see you in the fringes.
you are in the field of applied behavior analysis and you're working with people, if you are in psychology or anything close to it, you can guarantee yourself that whatever you're doing today will not be appropriate or correct in just a few short years. Like, and so the cultural humility that's required just to say, this is the best information I have right now, is important. And it's important not to shame people's practices that happened before. It's just history. But again, know better, do better.